relationship between state and society. He immediately juxtaposes that conversation with the question of non-Western peoples, and particularly people in India. He was thinking about India because, you know, India was the crown of the British, the jewel in the crown of the British Empire. And he says that, look, we can't give self-determination and these rights on liberty to these dark-skinned people because they just wouldn't know what to do with it. They're not prepared for self-determination, and they wouldn't know how to use these rights. And he uses the analogy in a very clever way. It's not that they can never become civilized, but he uses the analogy that these people are like children. It would be like giving rights to a children. The analogy today would be giving, you know, a child the keys to the car. They wouldn't know what to do with it. They have to be prepared. And he explicitly says, John Stuart Mill, that perhaps for the short term, the best situation would be for them to live under a benevolent dictator until they are, you know, civilized, and then they can sort of perhaps exercise their right to self-determination. Alexis de Tocqueville has a very similar sort of framing in the context of his views on Algeria. And, you know, you see this running through the whole discourse. So, you know, you see it in the case of Netanyahu in Israel, this idea that we embody the values of civilization. And he says this explicitly, and he said this at the UN speech, and so did the president of Israel. It's a common theme that you see coming out of the Israeli government. We are fighting, the Israeli government says, for the values that the West represents. We're fighting for you Americans and Europeans. You should be on our side. The other side is the embodiment of backwardness and barbarism. And this runs through the whole sort of history of colonialism, whether you're talking about the British in Kenya and the Mau Mau Rebellion, the British in Malaysia, the Dutch in Indonesia, the Portuguese in various parts of Africa. There is this, you know, binary framing. And so it's not a coincidence that the Israelis are using this language themselves. And it's good of you to pick up on this, you know, continuity, this persistent theme from Herzl to Netanyahu, that, you know, we are allegedly the embodiments of civilization and progress. And anyone who thinks that that is true, I just say, look at Gaza and look at what, you know, the meaning of civilization actually means for the people of Gaza, if you want to have a proper understanding of that term.
For decades, U.S. support for Israel was automatic, unquestioned. It was an unbreakable bond. However, in early October, the New York Times reported, 2 years into the war in Gaza, American support for Israel has undergone a seismic reversal, with large shares of voters expressing starkly negative views. Now, a majority of voters oppose sending additional economic and military aid to Israel. The Times calls this shift, quote, stunning.
Genocide will produce those results. And so I think that's a big part of it. What Israel has been doing over the last 2 years is so morally indefensible that it's a big, the country that had the largest amount of support, at least at a societal level, has basically abandoned Israel. I saw one poll where 50% of Americans agree with the statement that Israel is guilty of genocide. But the problem is this. While 50% of Americans believe that Israel is guilty of the crime of genocide, if you ask what percentage of members of Congress hold that position, it's what, maybe 1% or even less? And so this speaks to the crisis of our democracy. It's a significant point that, you know, I want to sort of double down on, because this is an incredibly dark moment. It's a dark moment because of what's happening politically in this country, what's happening internationally, what's happening in Gaza. And it's important for people to know that this shift in public opinion is not just a direct result of what people are seeing on their phones and what's in the media, but it's also because of activism and engagement. I teach on the university campus. It is impossible for anyone on a university campus today to defend what Netanyahu is doing. There's no support for Israel. And what's interesting to point out is that the situation now is so morally indefensible that the only way that the pro-Israel supporters can respond to this moment is not an engaging and back and forth and an attempt to defend what's happening in Gaza. It's to shut down university campuses, to silence people, to fire them from their jobs. to arrest them, to have the president, have the state intervene, to effectively shut down universities, because these universities now have become bastions of critical open support, mostly for the Palestinians, and the other side doesn't have a response. So they try and sort of, you know, pull a Vladimir Putin shutdown, crackdown on civil society as the only way of defending their position. So that's actually an indication of success, that on a societal level, anytime you go to any public space where there's a chance to have a public discussion, the vast majority of the audience is supportive of a radical change in American foreign policy toward Israel-Palestine conflict and on the side of the suffering of the Palestinians. No one defends what Israel is doing anymore unless you're within the Netanyahu camp.
And there are actions by dock workers in Genoa, for example, concerts, boycotts, flotillas, vigils, marches, demonstrations across the globe that heighten awareness of what's going on.
Yeah, the international solidarity movement in support of Palestine should give everyone who cares about this issue cause for hope and optimism. I mean, what's happening in Italy right now, not just the dock workers, but shutting down large parts of Italy by civil society activists in solidarity with the people of Palestine, in solidarity with the flotilla. So they arrested the flotilla members, the Gaza Samud flotilla. But it's important to sort of realize how in many ways, even though they didn't get to Gaza and they were arrested, it was a huge success, because the whole point of the flotilla was to shine a spotlight on Gaza and keep it in the news.
You're listening to Nader Hashemi on Gaza, Israel, and the United States. This is Independent Alternative Radio. To get copies of this program, call us 1-800-444-1977 or go online, our website, alternativeradio.org. If Not Now and Jewish Voice for Peace are two prominent American Jewish organizations critical of Israel, what do you think about their efforts, and how important is their presence at these demonstrations and vigils?
It's very important because it completely undermines the Netanyahu narrative and the AIPAC narrative that AIPAC and Netanyahu represents all Jews. What's so encouraging about the groups that you mentioned is that they are very active, very vocal, and very principled, saying, look, not in our name. Netanyahu wants to say that he's the defender of the Jewish community around the world. Well, those activists are saying, that's not my reading of my heritage, my tradition, my religion. And so it completely undermines that whole narrative. Just one personal anecdote. I remember the very first protest that I attended after October the 7th was in Washington, D.C. And it just so happened that I had invited the great Israeli journalist Amir Haas to speak about what was happening in Gaza. And it was the very first protest organized by the groups that you mentioned, Jewish Voices for Peace and If Not Now. And they had a big demonstration outside of Congress. And then they went into Congress and they staged a sit-in. And they were expelled, and they... What's so impressive about it is actually just the organizational sophistication, going to these public spaces, train stations, and, you know, basically occupying them and saying, look, we are not going to stay silent when these atrocities are happening. So it's wonderful to see these things happen. It's wonderful to see the, you know, solidarity links that are being built between Jewish groups and Muslim groups and Arab groups and other religious groups around this particular topic. So I'm a huge fan of what they've been doing, and the really leading by example.
And then there are non-Jewish groups like Code Pink, for example, Roots Action, Students for Justice in Palestine, and others that contribute to the discourse.
And all of these groups that you mentioned are absolutely essential, because, you know,